Thank you for listening to this episode of the Go Ye International Podcast. In this episode, I take the listeners into a new realm, a new world of discovery pertaining to the methods and proven success of one of the rarest treasures the state of Texas has inside its borders. The following interview is with Gene Solick of the Solick Farm in Iola, Texas, due east of College Station. This step-by-step instructional audio program will encourage and better equip those farmers and ranchers to better succeed in beef production. I now introduce you to Mr. Gene Solick. Thank you for joining Go Ye International in this episode. I interview a new friend, a new mentor, a man who has made a mark in the cattle industry, not just in mere profits, but in a way that preserves the family farm, that makes it profitable in a manner that is worthy of attention. It's honest, it's clean, it's sustainable. And this new friend of mine, this mentor, who's been doing cattle as long as I have been alive. His name is Gene Solick. Mr. Solick, welcome to this Go Ye International broadcast. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Aaron. It's a real privilege to have the opportunity to share the information with the people out there, and at the same time having the opportunity of making friendship with you and working with you to further preserve as well as getting other people involved in this. This is nothing new. It's just reviving those things that have been forgotten.
That's the unfortunate part, is that it was forgotten, and we'll develop this throughout the program when so many farmers were desperate a number of decades ago to just make it work on their existing operation, and they were persuaded by some philosophies and science about 50 years ago that suggested they needed to change directions. Well, they needed a change, but what they changed into has actually come back to haunt the cattle industry and the food industry in general. That's why I'm so excited about the method that you have in this paddock rotational grazing, intensive grazing system that is the hope for the future of farming and, in particular, cattle ranching. Throughout this program, we're going to show people with the hard numbers, the real numbers, the tried numbers, how they can plug it into their existing operation, or those that are starting from ground zero, how they can, with not that much money, start it off and turn a decent profit just in the first 12, 18 months. And so I'm so glad that you've been willing to offer your time through these now, well, it feels like 3 weeks when we just started a week ago. I just want my listeners and those that will be new to this program to know, if you do not know the Solicks, that is Gene and Ruth Solick, you really are missing out. And of course, it's impossible for everybody to have the personal relationship with them that many do, and as I've been blessed to now encounter. But I do hope that you will take to heart the wisdom that this man conveys to you in this program. Though it will, I'm sure it'll be rather long, it's worth your time, because you cannot buy this kind of information at a university. You're not going to get a piece of paper from the establishment that says this is the way to do it. This man has that behind him, but he's found a better way. So, Mr. Solick, just to give my listeners and those that may not already be familiar with you a little background, who you are, how you started, and that is in life, and your how you made it as far as you have today without depending on Uncle Sam.
Aaron, I was born and raised in this community, born back in 1927.
That's Iola, Texas.
In Iola, Texas. And at this time, or at that time, this was in the Depression time that I was born. And it was very difficult for families to get by. And that's all they were able to do, is just get by. And I was the fourth of a family of five. And it was very difficult for my parents to be able to feed, clothe, and stay above or out of debt at that time. I finished high school in Iola in 1944. And soon after graduating from high school, I went into service. And I was... had my basic in the tank corps, went overseas, went into the 33rd Infantry Division, and from there we went into the occupation of Japan at the end of the war. We spent some 15 months into the occupation of Japan, Then I was discharged in November of 46. I had to get myself back on the ground after being in service. And I had about 2 years there that I ran around and enjoyed myself, I suppose. I thought I was enjoying myself. But I had a friend that began to do some counseling work with me. And he was explaining to me that I had a college education paid for if I would just get out there and use it. And after he was working with me there for a period of time, he got me to see the light. And in 48, I started the college, and I finished at Sam Houston in 1952. And I was employed by the Pasadena Independent School District, teacher of vocational agriculture there. And I spent the next 22 years with the Pasadena school system in teaching and also in a phase of administration as director of transportation of the for the school system. And then I completed my teaching back into agriculture with the Conroe school system, retiring in 1982. And at that time, Ruth and I moved back to Iola when she retired in 84, and we built a home here. And we have been back on one of the home places since that time. That is at the time I began to get back involved in our program of raising cattle on grass.
You've been actively involved with your operation here on the Solick Farm.
That's true. Yeah. Almost 25 years. We'll be 25 on July the 1st.
Oh, this year. Well,
this
how about
year.
That? 25 year anniversary.
It's been the 25th year that I have been retired and been back involved in this.
Well, I wasn't aware that that would be exactly 25 years, so this production should be ready for your anniversary. How about that? With your educational background and personal explain there, you've also made a mark as a leader with various speaking engagements that you've been doing. In fact, this year marked your 15th year of your Clover Field Day. For those listeners who are not aware of that, would you bring them up to date exactly why you started that and how it's going now, 15 years later?
Soon after we came back here, I had an opportunity to run for the board of the Bedias Creek Soil and Water Conservation District. And I had just completed this past October, my 20th year that I had served on the Bedias Creek Soil and Water Conservation District. And I elected not to run anymore. So I spent 20 years there, and then I served 4 years on the State Soil and Water Conservation Board while I was serving on the Bedias Creek. And this furthered my vision of why we needed to do better with our farming operations and try to be profitable instead of always losing money and having to borrow and be obligated all the time. So we had gotten into it, and as we made our first planting of clover in about 1985, I was beginning to see the need that we had to get something in that would improve our forage that we could rely on year after year and continue to build the soil, have a better forage for the cattle to graze on, produce a better carcass for the market, and that people would be able to have healthy food that they could go for.
And as a result of the immediate results you were having, both in your forage as well as in the cattle's health and putting on weight, you were kind of, I guess, inspired or at least wanted to communicate that to everybody else, and therefore you started this Clover Field Day operation.
In about 1984, I had begun to read the Stockman Grass Farmer magazine. It was relatively new at that time. And they were having a three-day convention in Jackson, Mississippi. So Ruth and I went down for a pleasure vacation of working for me to have the opportunity to go to the Stockman Grass Farmer School. And I went there and was able to observe those people that were there and the speakers and what they were doing. So I thought, goodness, that's no more than what we have the capabilities of doing back home. So that was my first really inspiration to get started in growing clovers and getting acquainted with all of those. So we begun our clover operation in about 1985 on that. And our original plantings at that time, that has not been replanted since we made our original plantings. Of course, we didn't make a full 80-acre plantings on those time, or at that time. We made about a 5-acre planting of about 8-10 different clovers and other things at that. So we have come up from that point to where we are today.
And a lot of that the first few years was experimental, finding out what worked in this region, and we're going to get into that as we discuss some of these other categories. Just as we finish out this brief introduction here, Mr. Solek, would you give them a little bit more specific information regarding to your property, the size that you have, what you are using, and maybe any of you just mentioned you didn't spread seed over the entirety of it when you first began. Give them something to wrap their brain around when we're talking about what you've done, that they can kind of visualize that, those that are familiar with acreage and they are familiar with how to size it up in their mind.
We thought it would be best for the trial beginning here of trying several different clovers and ryegrasses to see which would perform the better for us. In our original plantings, we had about 8 different clovers. I don't even recall all the names of them, but I do recall the top 3 that we had good success with the first year, that being Arrowleaf, Crimson, and Ball Clover. They did a great job for us, and the Arrowleaf was number 1, Crimson was number 2, and Ball Clover was number 3. The second year of production, now this is not reseeding it, just letting it come back on its own. The second year, it was again Arrowleaf, and then the Ball Clover had moved into second place, and the Crimson then had dropped down.
And out of how many acres were you using at this point?
We were using about approximately 10 acres at that time.
Out of the 80?
Yes, out of the 80 acres. We were only on 10 acres of it. We thought it would better to take it slow and find one that would grow than it is to go out there and scatter seed on the whole 80 acres and have a complete failure and lose your interest as well. So the smaller acreage, we were able to watch it develop, be more involved with it, and this turned out to be a good way to go.
So Mr. Solek, when you experimented for the first couple of years with that and you started the clover field day each year, you found out what worked here in Iola, Texas, in this soil here, which is, we'll be emphasizing that throughout this program, because as you said, and they'll see in a video that accompanies this, it's what works for you. That's the name of the clover they're supposed to use. From that example, that small portion that you started with, it's now just all over the place.
And so much of it has been volunteer. And the cattle graze in mature clover. Then as they travel out and graze on the pasture, as we move from paddock to paddock, they are putting those clover seed down with the correct medium to really get that clover established all over the pastures. This is the easiest plantings that you can do. But at the same time, we have found that whenever you decide on the clover that is performing in your area, get the one that performs for you and that is able to reseed itself, and then go from there. Ball Clover is my stable one, and it has taken over the place along with the Marshall ryegrass and tetraploid. And we made those plantings some 12, 14 years ago. We were under the impression that we would have to replant those each year. But each year, they're making enough seed that we have not replanted the tetraploid and Marshall ryegrass since the original plantings. The big thing is keeping it grazed close enough so that it will not make such an abundant amount of seed that it will overpower the clover.
There's a real science to this.
Yes,
you know, you just don't go out and throw seed out there.
No.
I mean, any, you know, idiot can do that.
Yeah.
This takes skill, it takes experiment, and especially if people pay attention to those that have already done it, they have a lot to learn.
You know, you need to be a good listener. Glean off the information that will work for you. I thought for so many years that you couldn't make a planting unless you went out there and took mold boards and broke up the ground and everything, but I found out that I was doing more damage to the soil and to myself and more expense than any good that I was doing at all. I was having erosion, both wind and water. So plowing was not the thing. All in the world you've got to do is get you a little seeder and go out and put your seed on top of the ground and let the cattle walk it in. Put the cattle in that area that is with them concentrated enough that they can walk over that area and pad that seed down into the ground so that it will germinate and come up with a good root system.
With this clover field day, it's drawn a lot of attention, but there's been, I guess overall, some people have been kind of hesitant to jump into it. And what we're going to show them in this model is that it's financially feasible within the operation they presently have, if they have the space. And for those that are just starting from ground zero, it's still financially feasible. I mean, we're running right now less than $25,000, completely fenced in, 20-acre, waterline, two-point system with seed, fertilizer, ready to go with an initial 20 head of cattle. So this is a 2020 program, okay? 20 head on 20 is what we're about to transition into here as we develop these sub points from step one to whatever step we get to. What these newcomers and those interested will need to do to make this work in their area.
That's true. And in our experience and watching others, you think 20 acres, that's not much. It won't carry many cattle. You're going to be surprised whenever you get a 20-acre area out there, which is 660 feet wide and 1,320 foot long, gives you 20 acres. And it works so well in how you can divide it up. As you begin to get your clover and other grasses are going to improve and get just better each year as you graze it and control it and manage it, that will surprise you in the number of cattle it will be caring for in 2 to 3 years. But at the present time, on a 2.25 acre plot, we have divided that 2.25 acres into two paddocks, which now makes it 1 acre and 1/8, and we're running 50 head in there for 2 days. And people say, goodness, they're stair-stepping. They are just double-stacked. No, they're not. They're out there enjoying themselves because they're in grass and clover that's up belly-deep to them, and it takes them 2 days to get it grazed down to an acceptable height. As we get the regrowth and the rain and everything, the cattle have already fertilized it. They have padded it down. And they've got that loose dirt up there, which holds the moisture, and it penetrates right down into the root system, and that grass is growing well. When you get back to it in the next 21 days or 25 days, you have excellent forage to graze again, and the cattle are making a terrific gain.
Some of these people that may be brand new to this, we're not giving them the idea that when these cattle graze that 1.25 acres down, you know, up to 50 head on that area, that it looks like a mowed lawn. In fact, a good portion of this forage is trampled down. Not only is there an abundance for them, as far as the weight of the clover and other grasses available, it could probably feed more than 50. We're starting with 20, and even at that, there's a good part of that forage that's just laying over because of the cattle just walking over everything.
Oh, that's very true. They're really wasting more. I think the old saying is that not only do they have 4 feet to mess up on it, but they have the poop machine and the mouth machine. So you got 6 points that are out there patting your grass down.
And actually, when those that believe that there's a creator of the universe that knew what he was doing when he made this, that these herbivores, these herd animals were out there, their 6 points going is actually a benefit to the soil by pushing down the seed into there, working the soil, aerating it, keeping the symbiotic environment going in that area.
Oh, that's so true, because the hoof action, if you want to see a hoof action, just move cattle across a road. Just move 50 head across, and just the one trip across, and look what they do to the soil. You don't need a disc out there. You don't need, because this is free, natural action, and they break it down deep enough that the seed can go ahead and germinate, put a root down, and grow for you. So they aerate the soil. And they fertilize it for you.
And all that leftover clover that they don't eat and leave behind, it's going to perk up for the next cycle, and or eventually it's just going to feed the rest of the grass species that are going to come up after it.
And I know that our audience out there, they're wondering, well, when do they reseed? How do they get their seed, have a chance to make seed on the plants? On the clovers, you really don't have to worry about that, because the clover, the regrowth there comes on very quickly. The flowering comes about. So if it can get 12 to 15 days in there, it will get good growth back, flower, have a seed that will be viable, and it will drop on the ground, and it'll lay there for a year, 5 years, 20 years. And whenever the medium gets correct again, then that seed is going to come up. But you've got to treat it correctly.
So we're going to move into this next section now, this target area of 20 acres. Now, this isn't to limit those that have already existing property that could utilize a much larger system, but we're starting this as the backbone, the core that can be expanded upon, or for those that may be limited to a 20-acre lease, they can still do well financially.
20 acres gives you enough to experiment on. And I think it's a good number in that those that have 100 or 500 acres, this gives you a chance to select without trying to plant all of it at one time. You can go out there and find what is going to produce for you and how your present grasses, such as your, if you have coastal Bermudas and Alicia and crabgrass and all those things, how they are going to perform in this clover base and other grasses that are in here. So the 20 acres will be your introduction. If that's all that you have, you will just continue to improve all of it, and you will be rotating all the time and learning the game plan, and competing in it. It's just like a football game or a basketball game. You're going to substitute so often in there, and you're going to find some things that you need to be doing. And it's just like we're going back in now and cutting those 2 acre paddocks in two. This is just a temporary cut. It only takes us about 15 minutes to cut up a 2 acre. That way we double our grazing and have a better use of the forage. You're going to find those things out as you become involved in this 20 acre plan. Then after you begin to see how it's performing for you, then if you want to jump to 100 acres or 500 acres, that's your choice. Take it a little slow at the beginning so that you do not lose your enthusiasm and your interest and say after the first year it won't work. You can't quit. You don't have a choice. You can't quit, because now things are too expensive and you do not have a choice. You've got to look back to nature and get in sync with her.
So this 20 acres is broken up into 8 2.5 acre paddocks.
Yes.
And that is further subdivided for the purpose of this rotational grazing into another half. So each 2.5 acre plot is divided down into half itself. So
right.
You're with approximately 1.25 acre. And this 20 that we're working out right now, head of cattle on this 20 acres, can go up to comfortably, but really no more than 50 head of cattle in that same paddock for up to 2 days in a quarter in an acre.
Right.
And so we want to show them that how they can use this in a rotational base. So if they're having the cattle on one of those paddocks that are one and a quarter in size, and you follow that around over the course of your 20 acres in that size acreage paddock, you're going to come around to, depending on all things go well with each paddock's forage, a number of days.
16 days is what the, if everything runs correctly, and one day in each paddock, you'd be 16 days and going around there.
But as you're doing right now, you have those cattle 2 days in
right.
that one and a quarter, and your system is still working very well.
But we're further developed than what they will be in starting.
That's right. So we want to show them you can get to
that.
The Gene Solik level.
Right.
But where they're going to start, that's why we're not encouraging them to go out and get 50 head of cattle on this system right away. They start with 10, but we're even saying comfortably you can start with 20 stocker calves in this 20 acres rotational system. So the things that we need to mention to them before they even get the land or start segmenting their land off for those that have large acreage available to them is the soil test. This is paramount in this, so you know what to do prior to, that is in preparation to the planting of that clover.
Aaron, number one, what time of year they should start? On planting on their clover, they should not begin before October, or the rule of thumb is to not plant as long as the temperature is 90 degrees or above. As your temperature gets down and it's constant below 90, then you're ready to put the seed out there for it to germinate. It can come up and it can grow. But if the temperature is more than 90 degrees, when that little small fragile plant comes up, then that 90 degree plus temperature is going to kill it. So you lose your seed, you lose your plant, and you wonder what happened. Do not crowd that planting date. Wait until the temperature is below 90 consistently before you do your planting.
And here in Texas, that may not be October 1st.
That's right. You may not plant until mid-November.
That's right.
And sometime that's a bit early.
So this is the key, is watch the temperature, but in the preparation, they can buy their seed in advance, just have it ready to go. In fact, the sooner the better, because everything's going up in cost by the week, the longer they wait.
They could buy their seed as soon as it's harvested this year and just put it over to one side, put it in your deep freeze, or put it at a place that the rats will not get into it. It will be ready to go when you are.
So right now in May of 2000, the beginning of May of 2008, if these people are serious and they're looking at starting this year, they have a target date to plant seed sometime after October, that October-November timeframe here in Texas.
Right.
Because if you're in somewhere in Oklahoma or somewhere else, you have a different climate zone to consider. But the key here is 90 degrees.
That's
get it
great.
Below 90 degrees. So wherever you are, check your temperature, and that's the time to plant when it's sustained below 90 degrees to plant. So we need to get into this soil test and why that's important, because they can have this done prior to that planting time and get their soil test, get the analysis going, what they need to do for an initial one-time fertilizing, because that's all that you've done, as I understand it, and then also get the preparations for any lime that may be needed to correct the pH balance and more that the lime does. And you're going to develop that for them.
On your soil test, you can go ahead and get that done at the present time and find out what that soil is capable of doing. Our soil here was so poor until it needed everything. And we used a blended fertilizer, but I want to share that ratio with you. And it's 7-17-23-7-3, and we only use 160 pounds of it per acre. All we're wanting to do is give that seed enough fertility that it can make a root and start growing.
And one of the key points here, Mr. Solik, they need to understand is that they don't fertilize in May or in August or September for that matter, because there's a reason why.
It will be used up by your grasses.
So the,
it'll be gone.
That's exactly right. So they need to just start making preparations right now. They don't need to necessarily buy the fertilizer in May and save it, but they can save it in their pocketbook, in their bank. And then when they're ready, come October, mid-October, whatever, they can start calling up the people to get these things delivered by the ton.
This particular analysis is low in nitrogen, which is 7%. This gives it just enough to get the germination of that seed and give that seed some food to grow on and get that root developed. And then the phosphorus is 17, the potash is 23, and sulfur is 7 pounds, and magnesium is 3. This has worked real well for us. They might, and probably will, on most of the soil analysis, they're going to recommend that you use a lot more fertilizer than that. We're not wanting to use a lot of commercial fertilizer because we're burning up the organic matter. We're wiping out our little microbes and our earthworms and dung beetles and all of those things with the commercial fertilizer.
And for those organic ranchers out there and farmers, when they hear this spectrum, whether they go, they'll have the least ratios there that they need to look into these various other supplements with molasses and compost teas and
right.
chicken litters and what have you. So, in fact, you did some homework on that aspect, what was comparable between the chicken litter and the powdered chemicals, the fertilizers that they bring on board.
In fact, the chicken litter would do you a great job if you have access to it. If you're not in the area where they have the chicken houses or broiler production or layers or something of that type, you won't have access to the chicken litter that would be applied to your place. So it does a good job, and it's even higher in nitrogen and some of the other components in that ratio than what the fertilizer is itself. If you have it, use it. If you don't, well, use a fertilizer to get it started. And some of you may be in situations where your soil is good enough that you would not have to fertilize. So let your soil test be your judge of what you use on that.
And that would be something they could start this summer.
Yes, they could go ahead and begin to get that soil sample, get the analysis back, talk with some people with regards to that soil test. Just thoroughly kick it around and become comfortable with what you need to do.
And as we're building this model for them, starting with 20 acres, and we're going to get to, we're right now in a theoretical planting here in starting in October 2008, and they're going to bring these cattle on board as we develop later on in the summer of 2009. But as far as costs are concerned, so they can keep, they can see how this is very feasible. Right now for the soil tests, and you want to get more than one. You want to get at least two so you can compare them and make sure that there's some cooperation there between the analysis to get a better assessment of what your soil is. So they're looking at approximately less than $100 to get the soil analysis from two different sources.
Your land grant colleges will run a soil test between $5 and $10 for you. Then if you go to a soil lab, their test will run anywhere from $50 to approximately $80. They're more in detail than some of the other soil tests. So you need to decide which one you want to use or both of them so you can make a comparison. Some do that. And sometimes it's a money saver to go ahead and have two that you're able to compare and select the one that you think is doing the better job for you.
And there's some tips on how to do soil tests that are in a video that is a companion to this audio track separate from it. And the links will be on this podcast page so they can go to that video and watch some demonstration on how that they can easily obtain some of those soil samples.
The person that's doing this is making it very simple that you can make the soil test and you're able to take many tests throughout your paddocks or your pasture or whatever it is and get a good cross section of that particular 20 acre plot or 50 acre plot that you might be running a soil test on.
So right now we've got approximately $100 that they can set aside for up to two soil tests, and that's critical so that they know that they're not going to fertilize unnecessarily or get too much, and they target it specifically for what their soil needs. Now, with that soil test in their mind and ready to go, which they can start any time between May 2008 up until that time of October, they don't want to wait too long because I don't know how long it takes for these tests to come back, but they might go on Thanksgiving vacation or something. You want to get it back prior to the planting of the seed so you know what to do. Now we're going to move into this actual seed planting, and we're going to discuss some of the clovers that you experimented with in more detail than you've already brushed over in the introduction. And we'll give them the cost on approximately what it is right now in 2008, May 2008. As everybody should be aware, everything is increasing. So I know that these numbers are dated, and they will only increase further in the time that people access this information. So seed, the reason we're talking about clover here is because that is the primary winter forage for our region here in Texas, if not across the continental United States for that matter. Would you help these people understand, Mr. Solek, why this clover is the key to keeping cattle on grass, not hay, during the winter here in Texas?
In getting your clover established, and after you have gotten it established, then it comes the job of managing it for your cattle. And it's very easy to manage. A lot of people have concerns about the clover bloat. There are many aids that you're able to use now for clover bloat.
And we'll cover that later.
That will be coming about. So you don't have to get too nervous about that. Those trials have been run. We've been using it for several years, and it works quite well. And getting established here, you're going to be putting your clovers in probably different pasture grasses. Your coastal, common Bermuda, crab grasses, Alicia, Bahia grass, all of those are common grasses in our area and in most of the areas throughout the state and in other states as well. The planting of your bald clover, we've talked about the time that you're going to plant it. A lot of you are asking about breaking the ground up for planting it. No, don't break it up. You're adding an additional cost to it, the fuel, equipment, and the other thing is it shouldn't be done.
That's
because
yes.
You're opening things up for wind and water erosion, besides killing your other microbes, your dung beetles, earthworms, that you're damaging them.
Bare soil
is just a no-no because you're killing that grass that's already established there. And this clover will establish itself in that basic grasses that you have in your own pastures at this time. Planting that you want to do is to just put the seed out with it inoculated on top of the ground, get your cattle in there and let them graze it, put that hoof action on that, keep them concentrated in that particular area so that they are able to get that seed mashed down in the ground, and then it'll be able to germinate and come up.
This template model here that we're introducing people to, or at least further reinforcing for those that are already familiar with it, is that there is a choice here. There's two options, is that they can put cattle on this initial startup of clover as early as?
If they do a planting in October with some rain and just some decent weather, they could be grazing the last of November and the first of December. Not heavily, but they would be able to start grazing there in that length of time if things are rocky.
If that happens, there is the possibility, due to the beginning stage, if you haven't even tested out what works in your region, you were looking at running about two or three different kinds of seeds to begin with, they may be better off if they can wait to not graze it until that coming summer. If we're starting a planting in October, November of 2008, they may be better off to just wait, because otherwise they might have to reseed due to the infancy of this new cycle that you've introduced.
A lot of people are, on that first year, they just kind of set aside that, let the clover have a chance to develop itself, form its seed, and really become acclimated to that area. And with that seed crop down, for the coming year, you'll have a good seed base, and your seed will come up the next year, and you'll have a stand that is a lot thicker than you normally would with just first planting and grazing it pretty severely. That doesn't give it a chance to develop, because this is something new that's being introduced to that soil and for the growth of it.
And in this planting of clover, we give them some numbers here. What are they looking at in terms of amount of seed per acre?
Clovers, there are different clovers, and the seed size is also different. I'm going to speak with reference to the bog clover here. The bog clover, you only need to plant about 2 to 3 pounds per acre. It's running in price as of now, or this past year, from $3 to $5 a pound. So for $15 an acre, you can have your clover seed, bog clover seed, that is sufficient enough to cover an acre with 3 pounds. A bog clover has 1 million seed in a pound. And if you were able to take that pound out there and get it distributed on an acre evenly, you would have 26 seeds per square foot, which is more than enough. But it's pretty difficult to take a pound of flour and go out there and spread it on an acre evenly. And that's about what you're trying to do with the clover seed. So you got to get a good medium in there to carry it. And with it being inoculated and everything, and with the other cedars that we have now, you can cut it down very, very close there, almost needle-sized holes, and you can put these seed out and get a good coverage on them. Other seed on air leaf, they're much larger, and it'll take more per pound of those seed to establish. So take the recommendation that will be given to you in planting the different seeds, and you'll come out fine with that.
On that recommendation point, there may be people in their area that they need to investigate or follow up with and ask them what are they using and what has worked, and you might save yourself some of that trial and error.
If you can find someone that's already growing clover in your area, it will be to your advantage to move in there and talk with them and get them to tell you how much to plant, when to plant, and all those different things there that they have incurred in getting established. And this will save you time, money, and also give you a great deal more experience in what you can do. So use the references and those people that are available to you as to planning and other things that they can help you to improve on.
We ran some numbers here in working this out, Mr. Salek, and I kind of rounded it up, but everything's going to go up, and that's why I did that. So I basically put down to cover 20 acres with clover, the ball. I think we mentioned the ball clover there. We're running about $400 to cover that, the initial planting. And if it's successful, that's the only time you're going to plant, because you've only planted clover one time in 15 years.
Yeah, we've been established a little longer than 15. We planted our first clovers in about 83.
Oh, well, then that's even better.
Yeah, so it's about 24 years that it has gone on here. And we've allowed $400 in there, and this will give you clover that's going to run $5 a pound or a little more. Mm-hmm. And so that'd be $20 an acre that we've allowed you, and that would be the $400 there for seed. And hopefully that will be enough if seed prices will stay somewhat stable.
And again, if it's successful, and there's every reason it should be if you follow these steps, especially when we get into the fertilizer, the liming, and which is going to be based on your soil test, this is a one-time thing. And
yes,
it's just going to, through the actions of the cattle moving about and their manure and it's in the wind, it's just going to spread over your property in abundance as it reseeds itself. So this is most of what we're discussing in this model is an upfront one-time expense.
That's true.
And in discussing seed, we have more than clover we need to consider in this operation. The clover is relevant to the winter forage primarily. and it will carry even into the spring, as it looks like on your system here. It's even going to knock on summer's door.
Yeah, our clover, if we can continue with having a little cool weather and some moisture, this clover can run to the last of May, and under a good condition, it could go on up to mid-June.
And that's the clover, but you see the necessity of having more than one species of grass on your property. And we've written a few out here. Let's discuss the rye and why you recommend the rye.
We're using a tetraploid rye, and also we use a Marshall ryegrass, and they have been blended together. They have done a good job, and we were not aware that they were going to be reproducing themselves year after year. We planted them some 12, 14 years ago, and we have not made another planting of the Marshall or ryegrass in that period of time. Our thing that we have to be aware of is to get in there and graze that ryegrass, because it gets up pretty high and it makes a lot of seed. So we're putting the cattle in there, and we move through rather quickly to graze that tops off of that ryegrass. The cattle like those seed. They'll graze those, and at the same time, we will be able to keep that seed from coming in such an abundance that it will overpower our clover and its growth and reproduction as well. And, of course, the cattle do well on the ryegrass, and with a blend of clover in there, they have such a great forage to graze there. They're running 20-plus percent protein on the clover, and they're running from 12 to 18 percent on the ryegrass. Well, that is a terrific blend of forage for the cattle.
That's hard to find at the feedlot.
Yes, that's about twice as much as the feedlot is going to be able to produce or furnish for the cattle to eat out of the bunks.
And while we're on this rye, covering this, we've done some numbers here based on a figure from, I guess, a year ago. And the rye is running about $10 an acre. So you're looking at about $200 for this planting. Would they plant this at the same time they do the clover? They're going to wait until a later time in the year to come to do this rye?
You can go ahead and plant your ryegrass at the same time that you're planting clover, but you probably need to plant your clover by itself, because you have such a difference in seed size on the rye and the clover.
So for the distribution.
Distribution is the big point there. Oh, goodness, it is so small until, well, you think about a million to a pound, and it's about like a grain of sugar, but smaller. And that's what you're dealing with. It's like a fine sand. If it just has a pinhole, it can run out. So it doesn't take much to be able to get 2 or 3 pounds of the ball clover seed to cover an acre there. On your rye, that's larger, and we'd recommend that you only plant about 10 or 12 pounds of the ryegrass and Marshall mix there together per acre.
Okay.
And that way you wouldn't be overpowering your clover.
They'll already have several native grasses that are on their property, wherever they are. And those will work in a symbiotic fashion with these grasses. So they already have something going for them with whatever grasses they have existing on their property now.
The big thing that a lot of people, when we first started here with the clover, they're saying that, oh goodness, the clover is going to keep our Bermuda grasses from coming out early enough that they can graze. You can forget that idea. All in the world the clover is going to do is feed that Bermuda grass with a good fertilizing or fertility into the soil, and that Bermuda grass, whether it be coastal or some of the other grasses that they have developed, is going to come on very, very strong, and it's going to be so much better than what it has been because of the additional boost that the clover will give it. Because with the nitrogen that will become available with this plant breaking down in the soil, that is what is going to feed your next year. So your pastures are going to be better from here on out as each year improves with the plantings of your clover and your ryegrass. Now, don't forget that you're not going to have to plant after that first year if everything goes well and you get established. So that is going to be coming back year after year. Your pastures will be getting better and better year after year. Our pastures now are coming up from probably a 5 or 6% protein at the best that those pastures were able to produce in the spring. Now they're affording grazing that's running from 12 to 22 or 4%. The cattle are performing different than what they were back 12, 14 years ago, yeah. too.
There's a piece of equipment they can benefit by greatly, and it's not that expensive to distribute this seed themselves. It's called a
Bumper Buddy.
Bumper Buddy.
Yeah, Bumper Buddy. These are used by, many of you may be using them already, that go out on the deer stands and you're putting seed out. And they're just a little thing, hooks on the back end of the four-wheeler, and you just snap it onto the battery and a little fan runs. And you get it cut down small enough, you can use that putting your clover seed out. So all you have to do is sit on your four-wheeler, drive over the 20 acres, and you've got it seeded in an hour or two, and you're through.
And for those that don't have four-wheelers or these things, you know, these Kawasaki mules, as they're called,
yeah.
they can just get out there with whatever existing tractor they have with a little modification on the hitch, and it'll still work just as fine.
You can doctor these things so they'll fit most anything.
I mean, if you have a golf cart.
Yeah. You could just strap it to the back end of the tailgate of a pickup, drive over it, just hook to the battery and go on. And so you can improvise any number of ways of putting these seed out.
So with this initial planting of clover and rye, the clover running about $400 per kind of clover.
Yes.
And again, you may want to plant two, maybe three, if you don't already know what's working in your neck of the woods. Because if you have nobody else that you can, you know, glean off of for information and what they've already found to work, you're going to be, as it were, shooting in the dark in terms of what's going to work in your soil with its chemical composition and so on and so forth. So with an extra $400, maybe if you can afford it, an additional $800, that would put you at $1,200 just for the clover, having three variety, so you can best find out. So with this, just one kind of clover, we mentioned the ball clover, $400 to cover this 20 acres. The ryegrass covering the 20 acres, that's $200. You have a Bumper Buddy at about $150. With that soil test, we're already up to not that much, which is right around $1,150. So as we go on to this, this is what they would do initially, and they can start making preparations right now in May. They can start, you know, when the seed comes out later this summer and is ready, they can have it set aside and get it while it's cheaper, get their soil test done, get the equipment, the Bumper Buddy, and they'll be ready to go come October, November 2008.
Also, I would suggest that on their clover that they go ahead and find a source of it and find those people that are going to be harvesting clover this year and get their name on the list, because there's a lot of plantings that are being made now with the ball clover and other clovers. So the production of the clover seed may not be enough to satisfy the demands, because many people are going to be turning to the use of clovers now with the cost of fertilizer.
We're going to run into an availability
yeah.
issue.
So you've got a problem there, and get in there and get your seed spoken for early and ready to go.
All right, Mr. Solik, as the rain is coming down now and giving you some much needed watering out there, we're going to get into now this third category, which time-wise, it's going to be put down very close, the same day you're going to bring that out, or the day before, the day after, relative to the planting and spreading of this seed. But we're going to move into this lime. Why? How much? And we'll give them the cost on that. And also fertilizer that they'll learn from their soil test how much they're going to need and what we figured up for them just as an initial installation there.
With their information from their soil test, and they may get this somewhat earlier, they do not want to go in there and put that fertilizer down in August and September. They need to wait until the clover is ready to be put out, the temperature is ready to receive it, and then get your fertilizer and lime put out there. Lime you could put out earlier, but let me speak with regards to the fertilizer first, and then we'll come back to the lime. Your fertilizer, if you put it out earlier than the clover, it's going to go to work then if you have moisture enough, and the plants that are there, that are existing plants now, are going to utilize that fertilizer, and it will be used up before you ever get your clover seed planted and germinated and up. So you need to hold off putting that commercial fertilizer out until you get your seed out and getting those ready to go.
So could they be done the same day, the day after? Let's get nitty gritty for them.
On the fertilizer, they really have a choice. They could do it then. They really could wait until that little seed kind of got germinated up a little bit and put it out then.
Okay, so it's not vital that they do it the day before of. They have a week or so, weeks in there.
Yeah, they got 2 or 3 weeks there that they can get that. Weather may kind of keep them out. It's too wet. They can put it out certainly if it's too dry, but they like to have moisture. So it's all working in. And then with reference to their lime, lime does so much other than just the pH of the soil. Lime makes other nutrients available to that plant whenever the lime begins to work down into the subsoil structure. Lime also conditions that soil so that it is able to hold more moisture for the plants for a longer period of time. And it makes that other plant elements, other food elements available for the plants to feed on. So lime is a very critical thing other than just pH. It does a big job for you. And we're suggesting that you put out a ton of lime. And now the lime has gone up from last year here in our area. Last year we gave about $22 a ton, and that is spread per ton. This year it's $45 a ton. So there's your cost on your lime per acre,
which is rounded up to about $1,000.
About $1,000 for the 20 acres. So you've got that into it, and you've got your fertilizer cost in there that you're going to use about a ton and a half on that 20 acres, because we're suggesting that you use about 150 pounds to 165 pounds to the acre, and you're going to utilize about 3,000 pounds, about a ton and a half of the fertilizer. And, of course, fertilizer has jumped considerably. You've got the figure on the fertilizer there.
We came up with, for the 20 acres, about $900. Yeah. I just rounded it up to $1,000 because the longer people wait for this, they can expect the more the cost will go up. Just keeping it round, it's $1,000 for the lime on the 20 acres.
That's correct.
And it's $1,000 on the fertilizer. The chemical fertilizer, the chicken litter you're going to discuss on its application acreage-wide and its cost is significantly different.
On the chicken litter, we use as much as 2 tons to the acre, and our chicken litter at the present time, we get it for around $21 a ton spread. So we put out a ton to the acre, we're looking at $21 to the acre, so on the 20 acre, we're looking a little over $400. And that's enough for the first year to get it down for it to feed your clover seed, getting all that started. And then you could put down another ton later on if it's available to you.
So with the fertilizer and the lime, they're looking at an additional $2,000 in this startup. And the lime will be something they'll do periodically. In fact, really the studies are coming out, as you've encountered and read about, the more the better.
I tell you, as we use it and as we read about it and as we observe, we're seeing things that are benefiting from the use of lime that we were not aware of.
And the key component in lime is the calcium.
Is the calcium in there. And the things that we're seeing now since the use of the lime, our dung beetles, earthworms, are working a lot more in numbers, and their activity has been increased considerably. So the lime is not only making plant food nutrients available to the plants, they're also feeding these microbes and the dung beetles and earthworms that are so vital for the improvement of the soil and for your plants to have the ability to grow and be healthy.
So back to the chicken litter, we came up with the cost of $500 delivered and spread on just 1 ton per acre.
That's correct. And that will be enough at that time to feed that clover, your ryegrass, and those that are getting established. Then if you'd like to give it a good boost later on in the spring or something else, whenever they clean out the houses again, come back in and put another ton or 2 tons on it at that time, and then you will have a lot of grass and a lot of clover and other things that you can really glean off of and be proud of.
If they did an initial 2 tons, it's 1,000, or they can split it in half, do one early,
right.
At the start of this in that late part of the year, and then come in, and do another half somewhere else in the time
right.
of year at the cost of 1,000. So those that are listening to this and doing your own homework and writing down these numbers, you figure out what you want to do. But I've got it rounded up to 1,000 just for 2 tons. Not necessarily applied at the same
Correct.
Time, but in this 1 year cost investment that you're putting into this 20-acre template for this paddock system. You just right now add on to the soil test, the seed, and the lime and fertilizer. Add that extra $2,000, we're right up at around $3,250 so far. And this is all in preparation at this point, and we're right in the time frame of November 2008. If those of you who are serious about this are starting this year in May and thereafter, 2008. We're moving on into some infrastructure now. The fencing of this 20-acre paddock system, both on the perimeter and the interior fencing that is broken up into smaller paddocks for this intensive rotational grazing system. And we will give you the numbers on what it's currently costing right now out of a current flyer from a farming magazine, and you'll get the idea of what is best. We're looking at right now for a complete electrical fence that will be the proven and verifiable means of keeping the hogs off of your property, and those that also will follow the links to the video that will be hopefully finished by the end of May 2008, you'll be able to see, if you can't believe what you're about to hear from Gene Solick, that you can keep hogs out of your property with one hot wire and never have to think about it again. Mr. Solick, as we get into this, some people might think that $3,500, $3,500 is not going to cover the job. To keep in anywhere from 20 to 50 head of cattle inside of 20 acres, especially when you have it broken up into 1 1/4 acres by the time you get down to how they're going to be rotated in this 20-acre section. So help the listeners understand that $3,500 is the best way to go, because we're rapidly getting up well above $12,000 to do it other ways, which won't be of any significant help anyway.
Aaron, in looking this over, we feel that this is the most economical way to go, because you're having to use less wire, less materials, less posts, and all those things by going electric. But we do recommend that you use the 12-gauge wire that is of the strength and size that it'll not be breaking. It'll stay out there for years. And the way that your posts and everything that will be put into the ground, this is the most economical way to get started with the fencing. And with the electric fence, after your cattle have become broken to the electric fence, they are no longer a problem. They become much gentler, easier to handle. And the other thing is that the way that you have them confined, they become gentler, and they also become a lot more docile in moving them about from one area to the other. The more that you are around them, the more they become friendlier with you, they trust you, and they're ready to move. They know that you hold the key to their enjoyment of grazing to move to that next paddock. By putting in this 1 12-gauge wire to retain the cattle in those areas. And if you're having a hog problem, you take and put 1 12-gauge wire about 8 or 10 inches off the ground. And you can use the same post that's being used for the retention of the cattle in that by just putting this wire down at near the ground level, about 8 or 10 inches from the ground level, and with it being hot, a lot of people say that you can't contain or keep hogs out of an area like that.
We'll show you folks on the video.
Yeah, this you'll see on the video, and you'll see where they have rooted up to that hot fence, and then they stopped before they got there, just about 6 inches from that hot fence. And it will keep them out. My neighbor started doing this about 4 years ago, and the hogs were just overrunning him and myself in there. And whenever he put that over, installed this, then this cut the hogs from coming to my place. And on our fences, we can, by just jumping the current down to the bottom wire, it's about 10 or 12 inches from the ground, then that wire becomes electrified. And it's so easy, when you need it, you can just hook it right up. And if you don't need it, you can just unwind it or take it off. And just a jump of wire is all it requires. So it works real well. And it's very economical. You get 40, 50 hogs in there overnight, they can do so much damage to your soil, your plants, and also the tearing up of the ground itself. You can spend hours of trying to get that back into a smooth shape and still not have it there. As soon as it rains, it'll be packing down, still have holes in it. So they can do more damage in one night than what you can correct in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anytime you start digging, it's a very good idea. In fact, you should do this because you can end up liable for any pipelines, cable lines, just lines in general that you accidentally get into. So we have a phone number here that you will want to call if you're taking notes. And this phone number is 1-800-DIG, that's D-I-G, TESS, T-E-S-S. Or for those that like the numbers, again, 1-800-344-8377. And that'll get you to the initial automated service, and then you'll get in line and wait to go through the process of telling them where you're going to dig, and they'll give you the information you need to know on what to avoid, if anything at all. So make sure you give them a call before you start digging. It has the probability of saving you a lot of money and trouble down the road. And continuing with the fence, Mr. Solik, this $3,500 package that we've pretty much put together, which will fence out the perimeter, including the bottom wire for the hog prevention there, and the interior, this 12-gauge cable, it comes out to about, it's exactly 3 links. Well, it depends on how you lay it out, but ours is in links here. 3 links on this 20-acre paddock system that total 3,960 linear feet. You're running, depends on what kind of post you use in this system, you're running anywhere from 21 cents per linear foot or up to 31 cents per linear foot.
When you get your post and the wire and your bracing, that's going to take care of most everything that you'll have besides the wire reels that will tighten the wire. You'll only use normally just one of those on 1,320 feet. You can tighten that wire with just one little light reel. And so you're only talking about 5 reels there to take care of the cattle fencing. And then the same is true for the wire that you put down for the hog. So altogether, you probably would run about $30 worth of little wire reels in there because they're about $265 a piece, and you can tighten that wire very, very tight with those.
So with this, we're running real close to $3,500 for a complete electric fence to keep the cattle in, rotated, and the hogs out.
Yep.
$3,500.
And just one night, Aaron, with the hogs, you will have over $500 worth of damage in on a 20-acre place, and it'll several days for you to go in there with a tractor and disc or with a box blade trying to shape it back out, and you'll not get through in one day.
You're coming up on something very, very fantastic, not only in terms of the space that you're using, But there's something special about the grass at this point when you can keep this cycle going within just a 20-acre segment.
You have the ability to move them faster if you have less grass, because some paddocks are going to grow at a different rate than others. Weather condition has an effect on it. You have 16 different paddocks here that you'll be grazing. And if you use 2 days for each one, that'd be a total of 32 days for you to go through those paddocks. Some of them you'll need to move through faster than the others because they will not have as much forage. Others will have more forage and you'll need to spend a little more time in those. So it'll balance out that you probably can average that 2 days in each of those paddocks. But you need to remember that you move when they need to be moved out if they've only been in there 1 day and they're down to the level that you need to get them out, then it's time to move them because you do not want to stress that plant out. The goal is to graze it down quickly and move. And then that way they have not stressed that plant out. They haven't stressed the plant's root system out. So they're able to generate and get back to growth in just a matter of 3 or 4 days. It's gotten over that shock and it's reviving itself.
And so by the time they come back around, let's say in 21 to 25 days, though they can, if it's optimal, which is rare,
right.
which optimal would be you got a 32-day cycle there. But within this system, 21 to 25 days, they'll be back around from where they started.
Yes.
And that grass will be grown back. It'll be vibrant. And they'll be ready to just start another month.
Yes. The program will not work if you do not rest it and rotate. The program must be rested and rotated. Otherwise, the cattle, if they get to graze and be the boss of when they move, they will be grazing the 20 acres each day and every day over the whole thing. And they regraze too quickly, and they'll stress the plants out, and they'll cause them to die and not to be productive. Rest and rotation.
And this is what we see is somebody that will have the same 20 acres. They won't have any fencing or paddock system in the interior of that perimeter
right.
fence, and they'll have, maybe 20 cattle on the same 20 acres, but they're not going to get the production out of that same 20 acres as they would if they had this just with just a $3,500 fence that will be, for the most part, a one-time purchase with low maintenance and with an increased production as well as a preservation of the property.
Well, really, they're not having, they got to have a fence even if they just have one fence out there and grazing. They still got to have a fence. And all we're doing is adding the other part in there for rest and rotation and for you to manage that. So it has to have a fence to start with, but we're telling you how much it costs for the whole thing. And if you're going the other way, you still got to have a fence and you're going to have the expense. This way, we're taking care of you on the fence, plus the keeping out the hog, resting the ground, resting the plants, and rotating the cattle through. The other thing that you're doing is getting the concentration of the manure in each of those paddocks, which is so vital and so helpful because as they are concentrated in that, they're grazing it and they're depositing the manure right where it will be fresh, used, and the dung beetles and earthworms go to work there.
We'll get into those dung beetles more. There's a lot of wonderful research that's been going on over the last few years and information that's come out. We'll save it for then because it's some pretty amazing data that has been documented with these little creatures that God made, these dung beetles. Now, with this rotational system, one thing we haven't quite touched on is you got into the hoof action and the manure. This is the supplementation mm-hmm. back into the soil. It keeps everything vital and moving. But there's something about after that grass has been grazed down and they come back around to that same paddock, say in 25 days, the grass has grown back and at the grass's growth cycle, there's something nutritionally beneficial versus if they're eating it in 10 days or in 35 days. That 20-day, 21, 24-day window there, that is key to something mm-hmm. pertaining to nutrition. Will you touch on that?
It's been found that grass, after it has been grazed down, under our rotation and supervision there, that it is able to reproduce itself and be back at its highest nutritive value of 15, 18%, or 16%, whatever the clover and ryegrass is running at that time of the year. It's back up at the highest point at that 15 to 18 days in that period of time.
And that percentage you're talking about is protein.
That's
correct?
Protein.
Yes.
It's in there. And which is the big thing that makes the grass so edible, and also that we can get great weight gains with it at that time and at that nutrient value.
And because of this, the cattle are staying healthy. They're not having the problems that you find at these feedlots. Plus, just the stuff that the cattle are eating isn't really what they're supposed to be eating, this corn and these other grains. It complicates their digestive system, so that man has to come back to, quote, the rescue and put all these extra chemicals into these cattle. You don't even have these vaccinations in your cattle.
No, we do not use vaccination. And some of the things that there's other advantages in this rest and rotation thing. And that is, the cattle are going in on a clean piece of grass to graze. They're in there 2 days. They move to another clean area. So the cattle are not subjected to manure that has been laying there and being able to hatch out flies and all those things, because here's where little helpful insects come back in and break all that down, carry it down in the soil where it needs to be to feed those plants. They are in healthier conditions. And being rest and rotated through there, they do not have to regraze over this infested pasture time and time again. And when they're out there grazing on their own, they are going over that whole 20 acres, maybe two or three times during the day. And they graze where they have already grazed, where other cattle have grazed, and the feces is on the ground. And here you have the disease problem that is a lot more prevalent than what you have in some of
these properties that have a grade to it, and the tank, the pond, mm-hmm. whatever they're calling it, is downhill. All that runoff is going back down in that water, and we're going to get into this and why that is the bad way to try and get water to your cattle coming up in this next section. But we're going to make sure we covered everything in this fence section before we move on, so that the listeners will be able to draw it out, plan it out within the space that they presently have. Just plug it into a corner of your 200-300 acres or whatever you have, or if all you have access to is 20, you'll be able to work out this 8-paddock system. So they'll have 8 2.5-acre plots within the perimeter of this 20 acres. Each of those 2.5-acre plots are with one wire diagonal from a corner to a corner across the 2.5 acres. You will have 1.25 on each side of that wire. And that wire is mobile. That thing you move with you on each one. That's not a stationary or a fixed wire. And so as you move the cattle, that wire will move as well. That up to 50 head of cattle can run on safely for 2 days, give or take what's going on with the condition of your grass, your rainfall, your soil. And you'll be back around this whole system within a month. And this is where other cattle people just can't get it. I mean, they'll see it on charts. They'll come to your place, Mr. Solit. They'll stand in it. And it still doesn't seem to click. But you've been doing this half my life.
Yeah, we have been active in this for almost 25 years now. And there's still a lot of naysayers out there that it just won't work. It's not feasible. But I got around to the point that I do not try to debate the question with them. If they can come and stand in it, look at it, and still can't realize and visualize it, then there's no way that words can describe it to them. So you got to be a believer sometime. And I think now is the point that a lot of people are going to become believers because of the price of a lot of products that are out there that have escalated. So until we've got to find a way that we can be productive and also be profitable. And this is one of the ways that we can do it.
And with a $3,500 complete fencing system, a hot wire fence, both to keep the cattle in and guided throughout the interior of it and keeping the hogs out, $3,500, your chargers, your wire, all your things, right at $3,500 versus $12,000, $14,000 to get five strand barbed wire run up around the perimeter that not only doesn't keep bulls, for that matter, the hogs definitely will not stay out.
Yeah, they won't stay out.
So this is something that people need to consider. It's proven. I've seen it with my own eyes here in Iola, Texas, with three different cattle farmers and ranchers doing it, because Mr. Solik has proven it. He's demonstrated it. And for those that actually will stay tuned to the program and read the description on the webpage, you will see the links eventually to the YouTube that actually will allow you to see this. We'll be putting together a video series that is the site to all the sounds you're presently hearing. Well, Mr. Solik, there's some people probably out there thinking, well, I already have a perimeter fence in. I've got to do this five strand barbed wire. I'll just electrify one of those or more than one of those. There's some problems with that and risk, isn't there?
Yes. If you electrify barbed wire, if an animal gets in it, they're going to be very excited, first place, being shocked, and they're either going to run forward, backward, or scrape up and down it. So it's going to be very cutting, and you can have an animal that can be cut severely, as well as a person that might get into that. This is a very dangerous thing, whereas a slick wire, you may get shocked, but you're not going to get cut, and you won't be there long enough to get scratched up bad, because you'll be out of it very soon.
So even beyond these risks here, if somebody was, I guess we could say, hard-headed and was going to do it anyway, is if they didn't have a fence and they were just going to go to barbed wire thinking that that was cheaper, we have a news flash for them.
Yeah, a 1,320 foot barbed wire runs almost $50, $49, whereas a 4,000 foot coil of 12 and a half gauge wire runs $86. So barbed wire is almost twice as expensive as the slick wire, 12 and a half gauge slick wire. So it's better to be slick, and it's more economical. It's not as dangerous. We've had the slick wire out for many years now, and we have yet to have one of them to be broken. Number one, you do not want to tighten this wire fiddle string tight. Yeah. All you want to do is just pull it so that it is straightened out good. And the reason for doing that is that when an animal happens to run into it or becomes involved in touching it, if they happen to charge the wire a little bit, and if it has a little slack in it, it will give and let that animal come in. And then at the same time, it will have enough resistance on it to bring them back out by pushing them back out. And they'll be trying to get out of the way of it, too, with that wire being hot. So we haven't had a strand of it to be broken in here in over 20 years.
For those who might be thinking, well, this, you're talking about electric fence, and well, we got to run, it's going to cost on our electric bill. I mean, is there really a significant cost there?
No, this thing is on impulse, and it probably runs on pennies for each month.
At that, they've got these solar chargers, or you can get a gas generator, and if the power's out, the electric grid's down in your neighborhood, you can still keep it hot, but you found that that's not even necessary anyway.
After the cattle become fence broke, and they're accustomed to that fence being hot, they do not challenge it. There's times that I will forget to turn it on, and it may stay off 2 days or 3 days before I realize that I have not checked it or turned it on. Cattle are still in, doing fine. So they respect where the wire has been hot. In fact, an animal will hesitate in going through a gate where you've had the gate that's hot, and you open it up for them to come through to go into the other paddocks. They have to see you walk through and to get it in their mind And then they will come through it very cautiously.
Because they do not like that jolt.
They do not like it. So they have a lot of respect for that fence being hot.
As we move on from this fence, we're going to get into how do you water these cattle. I'm sure some of these people are, well, how are you going to get water to these cattle?
Whenever I had begun, I think that was my biggest hurdle was trying to figure out and also get it in my mind how we could get those cattle watered without it being in tanks or ponds. Tanks and ponds are expensive to build. Tanks and ponds are very, very bad for the cattle to water from, especially where you use a large concentration of cattle and they have access to a tank or pond or whatever you might refer to that as a drinking source. It is their favorite pastime to pick up where they're grazing, go to the pond, stand on the edge of it, walk on into it belly deep, and stand there for 10, 15, 20 minutes, visiting one with the other cow. And while they're there, then they do their jobs all at the same time. So that certainly is not a good, clean situation for them to be having to drink water that is contaminated by however many head of cattle you got in there. If it's 20 head, 40 head, or 60 head, all you're doing is increasing their ability to get disease, other things passed on one from the other because they're drinking it. We began to draw up, talking with others, about how to get the water to the cattle in the best form at the cheapest amount. And it becomes so simple. It really was a no-brainer whenever you get around and start thinking about it. We got around to the point using a Schedule 20 pipe, 1 inch in size, and we just come off our own water well that furnishes our water for our home use. And we ran a 1 inch pipe down by the side of the road and then put a tee off going out into the pasture. And you can take and water 4 paddocks at one point is all you had to have. For us to service this 20 acres, we need 2 water points in there.
In the inside of this 20 acres.
Inside of this 20 acres. And each of those 2 points will water 4 paddocks. And when you further cut that into 16 paddocks, it still takes care of them all at the same point and will water all the cattle there. And we just use a half of a 55-gallon drum is our water tank. And it has a float in it. And all we have to do is just plug that in. It holds about 20 gallons of water. And you say, well, that's not big enough for 20 animals to drink out of. I agree with you. We have 50 of them drinking out of the same half of a barrel, and they get along just fine. But the secret is this. The cattle, they work that out among themselves. Number one, they only have to walk about 300 feet from any point.
Yeah, at best.
At best. At any point in that paddock, to get back to the water source. So they don't wait to get the group to go up there. When they get thirsty, they go up and drink 1 or 2 of them at a time. Come on back and go to work. So they don't waste time. They don't stay up there and lay around and contaminate the watering source by standing in it. They're going back, start grazing. Then others come up there. This is a very easy thing to work out, and they're most inexpensive. Oh, they still cost a little money. For $40, $50, you can have a water tank that water 50 head of cattle.
And for those who may not have understood, when you mentioned the float, this isn't something that just merely floats in the water for the cattle to play with. This is something that it works like inside the toilet. When that little ball goes up, the water cuts off. But when the water goes down, that float goes down, and it has a valve on it, so it allows water to gush into that big barrel.
It's very easy to manage and handle, and then all you have to do is just take and pour that 20 gallons of water out and go down to your other watering point, and it takes care of 8 paddocks down at that one point. By moving the drinking facilities from one point to the other, very easy. You just unsnap it, move it down, plug it in, and it's back into work. So,
and you'll only do that once in the course of a month, or twice in the course of a month, depending on which direction you're going.
Well, this water point is going to take care of 8 different or 16 days there that it's going to stay in the same position.
That's right.
So 32 days, you will move it one time.
We did some numbers on this. What would it take to install this 2-point water system to cover the water supply for up to 50 head of cattle, but starting with 20 in this model, a 20-acre paddock system with 20 head of cattle, and we covered this water with a 2-point water system. We got to about $700, but depending on where their source is, if they're on a well, if they're bringing it out of a big tank or a pond somewhere, or wherever they're getting the water from, there may be some extra distance that we can't forecast inside this paddock system as it relates to them individually. But this one more than likely covers that if the water source is significantly away from this paddock system, depending on if these people are plugging it into their, say, their 300 acres, and they've got a corner off somewhere they're willing to try this on. We're looking at $700 to $1,000 just on this 2-point water system from the source.
You once put the pipe down, our pipe's been in the ground almost 20 years now, and we've not had a problem with it. Your water troughs, which is a half of a barrel, plastic barrel, and float, goodness, they last you a long period of time, so you're not having to replace those items at all. So this is kind of a one-time cost. They'll go on for years that you can use them. Pretty, very, very economical, and whenever you think about a tank and the price of a dozer or other thing comes in there, you're going to spend in several thousands of dollars just to get your hole out there in the ground. Then you still have a problem whenever your rainfall drops off, the tanks gets down muddy, your water source then becomes more contaminated and not as dependable. And long as you got water that's in the well flowing, you got good clean water and at very economical price.
Consequently, is that you're not hooked up to a city water line. You're getting all the pressure you need out of your water system.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct. And you say, well, you're pumping a lot of water. We find that animals will drink about a gallon per 100 pounds of body weight. So a 700-pound animal is going to drink approximately 7 gallons of water per day. But when it gets exceptionally hot, they're going to drink more than that. They'll drink 10, 11 gallons a day. And after the weather is cooler, they drink less. So it balances out that they will consume about 1 gallon per 100 pounds of body weight. We have a meter on our water that goes to the pastures. And right now we've got 67 head that are drinking water. And they're varying in size from 600 up to about 1,200 pounds. And they're drinking about on average of 800 gallons per day.
And right now, we're right in May. Into the month of May, and it hasn't been unusually hot thus far. So that will pick up in as the weeks go on.
Yeah, they'll get up to 1,100 and 1,200 gallons.
Per day.
Per day.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Solik, just keeping track of these numbers here with the seed that we've purchased, you know, anytime probably after July of this year, 2008, and looking forward to that planting time frame of post above 90 degree temperature somewhere in October or after early November. People have to check the calendar on that. We're looking at trying to do all that fertilizing lime and the seed relative to the planting of that seed in that time frame, that October, November time frame. After that point, moving on into the next year, 2009, January, February, March, whatever people have available in cash at the time or can save along the way, or for those that choose other methods of payment, they can be working on the installation of their fence first. First, call that 800 number we gave you. Make sure you don't hit any pipelines, any gas lines, anything. They can be working on the installation of this system, and then they come back and they put in their water line, because they'll just follow the path of the fence that's already laid out, keeping things easy. That is for those who are going to use underground plumbing for this. Some farmers are well known in our country that are doing these above ground water lines. They just move one line throughout their paddock system. This Joe a soliton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does that above ground thing. But for those who prefer to put it on, because you get into some issues there with are the cattle going to be stepping on it, so on and so forth. So whatever you choose, the water can be installed in this very easily during this time frame. Because right now, as we're talking to you in this model, this 20-acre, 20-head of cattle, there is no 20-head yet. We're getting the infrastructure built. We're getting the grasses to grow. We're getting the groundwork laid for their arrival in the summer of 2009. So right now in May 2008, people ought to be sitting down, brainstorming, writing this stuff down, going to the links that we've provided for you. There is a friend of Mr. Solik, Tommy
Carroll.
Tommy Carroll. He has made himself available for consulting. That those that can't quite put it on paper good enough, you'll get a great service by Tommy. We'll give his number out as well when that time comes, and you will be able to get on paper during this summer of 2008 what you need to have done, where you're going to get your seed. Start talking to those that we're going to cover this later with the cattle, but they're going to start planning on where are they going to get their stocker cows from if they're starting from ground zero. Those that already have the operation of cow-calf, that's they don't have to worry about that. They'll be able to start setting off 20 of them for this next year to come around and plug into this 20-acre system in the summer of 2009. And they're going to make more money doing this way in the cow-calf operation instead of just selling them out as yearlings. Is that right, Mr. Solik?
That's correct. Instead of them selling them at 500 pound, then they'll have the option of going to 700 or 900 pounds or finishing themselves. So they can watch the market, see who they have that's interested in them or something else. So they can carry them all the way up to slaughter weights if they care to.
So this is the ideal framework to start working on. Right now is the time for those that want to get busy and get this started this year, because all of these prices we've been mentioning, or cost rather, are only going to go up. And that's an unfortunate part about this. So it's already feasible. We're running about, if you tallied up the seed and the fertilizer, the lime, the fencing, the water lines, we're right at about $7,750 right now. That's with your soil test. This is assuming that you didn't have to pay for any property. You already have that under your operation, or those that can obtain a lease somewhere down the road. Those are things that you'll have to, on a personal level, work out. So $7,750 right now. We've already got our infrastructure in, mm-hmm. Mr. Solik. The plumbing's there. The wire's there. It's ready to go. The seed's now growing. We're probably somewhere in the neighborhood in this cycle of things around February, March, and the clover will be coming in. The other grasses are there. People will be getting excited, seeing, hey, we need to get some cattle on here and start eating.
That's correct.
So just hold your horses a little bit. Those yearlings will be ready come July, August, and that's when you're going to start talking to your cattle ranchers out there that you know. This is that window of time that you're just building this foundation for the arrival of these stocker cows. So we're going to touch on another category first, because it's very important, the dung beetle, before we get into the cattle. And we'll explain the necessary function that they have in this farming in general. But
yes,
as it relates to this intensive paddock system, what great contributions they make to this. Okay, Mr. Solik, there's something that I became aware of through Acres USA. Charles Walters, I believe, is his name. He just wrote a recent book here this year, Return of the Dung Beetle, I believe it is. I'll have the link on this webpage under the description of this program for people to track that down. And another book on there, The War on Bugs. And there's something that we've, in this commercial agriculture that's taken place in your lifetime, Mr. Solik, that has actually caused a horrific detriment to the cycle of microbes and other little creatures in the soil through things that we're putting in or on the cattle, to all these pesticides, herbicides, and stuff. And these little critters, these little things, they're just not collateral stuff. These guys they're necessary, aren't they?
Aaron, I don't know how necessary they are, but I think I can describe it to you. And that is, without their help, you don't have good forage.
Well, this is exactly what this is about. So I guess, folks out there, if this business is built upon and around what kind of grasses you have and how well they do, and Mr. Solik says, well, the condition of your forage depends on these critters, I guess you can put it together. They're necessary.
You know, the thing is that when we started developing our place here, we had no dung beetles. We had no earthworms. Microbes was in the soil to a limited amount. Of course, we can't see those little critters. And we had already been fertilized out, overgrazed. The ground was just no organic matter in it. Very, very hard. If it was broken up, it was in big chunks. So we were trying to figure out what happened. Where are the dung beetles that used to break down the manure piles? Where are the earthworms? They're not present. Well, when you go back and begin to find out and how we were taking care of our cattle, and that was by ivermectin them, we was pouring it on their backs, we were drenching them with it. And as we did these things, this was killing all the dung beetles, earthworms, and weakening the microbes and putting all of these out of business.
By chance, Mr. Solik, was that Ivermec chemical also something the cattle would ingest, or was it only a topical external application?
They used Ivermec that was also a paste type to worm the cattle.
So that would directly end up in the dung that the beetles
yes.
maneuver and put into
right.
the soil. So they would be directly affected by that Ivermec.
Yes. This was effective whenever you doctored the cattle with it. It was effective for about 28 to 30 days that it was in their system.
So there was
so
a constant...
it did a thorough kill on all of the yeah. earthworms and the dung beetles and everything. It cleaned out the cow, and then it cleaned out the ground. So by doing that, we were getting a much less forage in quantity and quality, because we didn't have those things in operation there to take care of us. And we were getting a soil that was just mined out, and it just was down to nothing. We realized then that what was happening and what was killing off our, why we were no longer seeing the dung beetles, no longer seeing the earthworms. We had killed them. They were wiped out. So we have to be very careful as to how and what we use in doctoring animals. And here again, this is where we have much better controls by this rest and rotation. By the cattle going through the paddock system, they have the rest and rotation. They're in there, then they're out of there for almost 20 days.
They're healthy, their immune system's up, they're more resistant to parasites
right.
in the first place, and we're going to get into how you take care of that without all these, you know, pharmaceutical-type agricultural chemicals they want you to buy, Mr. Solik. You've got a real homemade solution here that anybody can buy at the local grocery store. But before we get into those in another category, this dung beetle in particular is really an amazing creature. Some of the information that's been coming out you're familiar with is these little creatures can devour a pet or a patty, a pile of manure, in 24 hours.
Yeah.
If you have the conditions that are prime for an abundance of dung beetles, they will take care of that, not in 2 weeks, not in 2 days, 24 hours.
You know, that's almost impossible to believe. But whenever you have 50 animals that's grazing in an acre and a quarter, and you can go out there the day after they are moved out of that paddock, being there 2 days, and you can imagine what 50 animals is leaving in there.
Well, they leave like about 35 pounds behind, don't
yeah.
they? Per day.
Per day. You're going to see, or you can walk around in that paddock and not get your shoes dirty. So those patties are pretty well all gone with a couple of 3 days after those animals are out of the paddock system. So another big plus there for you is that with that manure being broken down, putting into the ground, it's feeding the plants for the next group of cattle or that group
well,
come back.
Let's start at the top. You've got this paddy, these flies that bug these cattle all the time. That's basically their medium for growth, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's where the eggs are. It's in the paddy there, and these dung beetles are breaking it up, putting it down the ground. Well, that breaks the cycle on your flies.
So it really cuts that down.
Yes,
if you've got an optimal system, it might prevent it altogether.
So this is a big help in the situation there for us.
And as you just mentioned, so they're rolling it up in balls. They're actually planting their own eggs inside mm-hmm. of these dung balls. And they've dug these tunnels down as much as 18 or so inches.
Yes.
I mean, that's a foot and a half down into the soil. And they're depositing a manure ball that's actually fertilizer with their own little egg in the inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's multiple things going on here, from the aeration of the soil, the fertilization of the soil, and the beetle gets the benefit of having new beetles show up out of all this.
And the other thing we're getting a benefit from, like today with the rain that has been falling, that rain is falling on those patties, which have the holes under that patty that the dung beetle has made its deposit down the ground. And this water is running down into that hole, which is size of a number two pencil. And he's got, however deep that hole may be, 6 inches deep or a foot deep or a foot and a half deep, however depth he has dug to, that water can just run down in there and spread out. So now you've got water down at a deep level, and it is feeding that plant or has the ability to feed that plant for a longer period of time, and it can have a deeper root system, live longer, be a healthier plant, and produce a much more forage than what we did have, because that dung beetle is working and depositing that manure down to a depth. He's leaving a hole for the water to travel through, because that hole is not straight. It zigzags through there. That slows the water down, lets it spread out. So it's you just can't beat nature on how they do erosion control and takes care of things.
Well, it's real interesting here. In addition to everything that's been said about this little creature, the dung beetle, and the revival over these little creatures, is that the more you have, apparently, the better off your cycle's going to go, from manure to fertilization and all the stuff in between. As everybody can be an eyewitness to when they come out here to the Solek farm, they see with their own eyes something that they either think is a mirage or it's a hoax, or they see forage in Texas drought. You give them the details on how, you know, in your operation here, how the dung beetles have contributed in conditioning the soil so that through the last 3 years of summer drought in this state, you've kind of been the envy of the cattle ranching area.
We've had the opportunity to see what the dung beetles are doing. You said, well, we get too many of them. No, you don't have to worry about getting too many of them.
Yes, the problem is having enough.
Is getting enough of them. If they get too many, they'll figure that out among themselves, and some will go over to my neighbors and they start hatching out over there, and then they'll go from their own. So all we're doing is just making it better for everyone down the way. But we have been able to go through a drought this past year that came through the summer, went on into the fall, and it forgot to rain up until almost January. And when it did rain, we got our clover up, and we were beginning to graze the clover on the first day of February. And we have been grazing a little over, right at 100 head here on 80 acres since up in March.
Now, I want to pause there, Mr. Solek, and I hope these listeners got that. Through the last year, and you've gone through a few years this way here in
yes.
Texas, but just last year in particular, when it had forgotten to rain for some long period of time when we need it most, you didn't feed a bale of hay?
No.
You didn't call up the cattle rescue doctors to come and help out?
No, we continue to graze through rest and rotation. And we continue to have forage here that was capable of keeping around 80 head going through at all time. They could have done better, but they would have been in a catastrophe if we hadn't been in a rest and rotation program, and to have had the ability for that forage to come back and to get some growth to feed these cattle. We came on through the winter, and it wasn't pleasant, but we were able to get through. And as soon as our clover and stuff began to come out in February, our cattle began to pick up, and now they are doing quite well.
Well, not only that, you've got more grass than you know what to do with right now.
Well, we could be running probably 150 head in here at the present time.
But that's one thing we're going to get into in the next section here, is under the calendar section, is just how you rotate this thing over the course of a year, because you don't want to overstock when it looks real good, because it may, and usually does in the Texas summer, slow down with the waterfall, as you put it, forget to rain,
yeah.
And you will not be able to sustain that many, you know, cattle on what you were 2 months ago, because there's not enough forage to get around everybody.
It's much more enjoyable to ranch with an abundance of forage than there is to have a lack of forage.
And two things about that forage: it doesn't go to waste, it reseeds itself, and it's also organic matter, right?
Right. And cattle will graze it whenever it's dry and still do well.
Yeah, so it still helps the soil regardless if the cattle get to eat it.
Yeah. So it's all, none of it's wasted.
So Mr. Solik, just to give these folks a little idea about what they're going to pay for this dung beetle, we don't have an idea. Just a Google search on this little creature, just dung beetle, or buy dung beetle for sale. The only thing that I found for sale was somebody selling them as little corn chips, these crunchy things, and I don't think that that's necessarily a good idea. At least I'm not interested in that. However, after searching about 20 different sites, there's a lot of information about them, but to date, I have, at the recording of this, it wasn't easy to find, as you usually can find something simply by just doing a Google search on things. The news is still out about how you can do it yourself and develop these colonies to promote them, but we knew one thing is get rid of the chemicals.
And another thing is, Aaron, that they do not need to be interested in dung beetles if they're using some of these Ivomex and other products.
Well, that's exactly right. Either keep your Ivomex and forget the dung beetles and continue the problems that you've started, or dump the Ivomex and associated chemicals that you're using, and then bring in what God made.
That's right.
All right. Well, so we don't quite have a price for you, but I just kind of threw one out there, $350 to $400, just as a figure and adding this up, not knowing how many colonies that will purchase as of this May broadcast. And the key here is this is not the time in the sequence of steps to implement your dung beetles. Well, really, you want them to be there about the same time to do their job with the freshly laid manure. So we're covering it now because there was quite a bit of information pertaining to the dung beetle. So this would be in this cycle of things of preparation. Your fence is laid, your water lines are laid. You can now start looking for sources, and this would be approximately anywhere between May and July of 2009. A year from right now, at the recording of this broadcast in May of 2008, you'll be able to find sources or find out how you can start to replicate these things in abundance. Just keep in mind is they're not going to stay around if there's nothing manure. So these little creatures can fly 10 miles away according to our reading. So you want to have something for them to stay. There needs to be an incentive, because if you're paying for them, you don't want them flying off to your neighbor's property. So just keep in mind, you would implement the dung beetles at the time you bring these cattle on board in the summer of 2009. You're going to be researching this, reading the books on it, reading the free articles that are online, doing your homework, seeing the graphs that are out there. There's drawings, there's photographs of these things that will really amaze you what they can do if you make an environment conducive for their stay. And we've already given you at least one tip on how to stop killing them. With that, Mr. Solik, let's let them know how they would start in this cycle starting in May 2008 all the way back around to this time next year in 2009 when they're ready to go out and hopefully they've been doing their shopping, finding reliable sources. And I want you to discuss sources on this real quick to give them some tips on what to look for in stocker cows. I mean, it's just not going down to anybody and picking up things because you refer to them as clean. So if you'll develop that, move them in the direction of all they're going to do is a stocker cow operation, and then we'll come back to this cow-calf operation.
On the stocker calves that we run here, this is calves that are being weaned off their mothers this July, and we will be purchasing them at that time as soon as they are weaned, and we will bring them home the day that they are weaned. That'll be their beginning of their weaning process. We have a couple of suppliers that we are able to go in. One of them has about 125 mother cows, and we can go in there and pick out around 25 to 30 animals. Either we'll pick out mixed, mostly of them are steer calves, but some heifer calves. So it's necessary for us to pick animals that are good body quality, have good body conformation, and we're wanting to get an animal that appears to be growing well, not one that's real legging, that's going to be real tall, but one that's rather compact, that will hang a good compact carcass on the kill rail. The others will be on up around 1,300 and 1,400 pounds that you will be getting there. We prefer the others because we can finish them somewhat sooner. We feel like that we're getting a better carcass as well. Whenever I say clean, these animals have not been exposed off of their own farms where they are being raised without eating, having grain fed to their mothers or them having grain to choose from on their rations. They have been on forage and clover and ryegrass throughout the winter and their mother. So we're getting animals that are weighing 500 pounds or plus on that, and we pay a premium for them. And you can pick out an animal like that. It's going to run about $600 an animal. That's a pretty good gauge for it. Person is getting a little bit of a premium, and you're getting a choice of going in and picking these animals and picking the ones that you think that are going to finish out and do well for you. You'll not be 100% in doing that because they're going to fool you. The one that you thought that might be the king or queen in the bunch turns up and he doesn't turn out well. They're kind of like people. Everybody don't turn out good, but some are better than others. On the breeding cattle, if you have breeding cattle and you have calves there, it is, I think, to your advantage to go in there and pick out the animals that you would like to begin on this type of program. Instead of selling them at 500 pounds or 600 pounds, wean them off of their mothers, put them over in here and start them in this type of grazing program that you can run them on up to a weight of 800 or 1,000 pounds, or you can go ahead and finish them out. If you have the forage here that's good enough quality that you can finish them out, you have the clover and you've got the other grasses there to go with it, then hold them in there until they're 1,100 or 1,200 pounds, and then market them as grass-fed animals and get you someone that, or you sell them to your friends or neighbors or kin folks or whoever there, and you can glean off a premium money there. So these are the things that you have the options of doing.
Just as a highlight to perk up those eyes, you've encountered a few dress weights of 1,000 pounds plus.
Yeah.
That's after they're ready to slice and dice. They've cleaned away everything that's not going to sell, and just the carcass there hanging over 1,000 pounds.
We had two of the animals that had one dressed out 1,004 and the other dressed out 1,005. So that's the largest animals that we have had. And
now that may be unusual, but it still happened.
Right. We normally are in there in that 700-800 pound bracket is where we're finishing out. These animals that dressed out that, they were a Simmental cross. They're rather large animals, and they stay with you for a good long time to get up to that weight. I mean, even if they're making a 2.5 pound gain, he's got to stay with you a long time to gain 1,000 pounds with you. So you can figure out in your head pretty soon, y'all get to know each other on a first name basis.
Yeah, that's for sure. And for those that might have just had a gasp, if they're not familiar with the prices of this operation of just a stocker cow operation, saying, ooh, $600 a head to start it off. Maybe they need some help realizing if all goes well, and the probability is it's going to, what they can put in their pocket when it's all said and done.
We'll just take, for instance, and we'll just use a $3 figure because that way we can run that through our head real quickly. You'll average out about $3 with them hanging on the rail, and then the person that's buying it, they've got their cutting and wrapping cost in that. But for an 800-pound animal hanging on the rail, that's going to gross out for the producer $2,400. Instead of you selling a 800 or 900-pound steer or heifer over here for $900 or $950, you carry them on up here to a finish weight of 1,100-1,200, and then you have a possibility of those animals bringing around $2,200 to $2,400. I think that the profit is in there good enough and is attractive enough. It works out very, very well.
And you've given them a model here as you're doing yourself, direct selling. You're doing through the sale, not the sale barn, but through the slaughterhouse. And you have a person who markets it for you, so on and so forth. So you're willing to pay some of that out, whereas somebody else that may be doing the direct selling themselves will have a little different profit percentage than you've chosen to take on at this time in your life, being well into your years. There's a variability here that people need to keep in mind, that $600 is an investment into a rather handsome return a year to 18 months later.
This is very true. I mean, you get animals coming in here weighing 500-600 pounds, and you're going to put on another 600 pounds or more. It doesn't take long to figure out if they're making a 1 3/4 to 2 pound a day, that you're going to have to keep them over a year. That animal is going to be up there 18 to 20, 22 months old whenever you sell him. For the gain that you get in there, you can afford to keep that animal, and for what he's costing you to keep him is a very minimum, because he's eating your forage, and he's not eating out of a feed sack and in a feed yard and all of that. So you don't have the cost that it takes to feed an animal in a feedlot. They're grazing here. We don't have labor that we're having to feed those animals with. All we do is move them through the rest and rotation program, and that's minutes instead of hours.
Yeah, I've watched this man do his operation, and he's built it to this point. It will take a lot more involvement at the beginning for those of us who will start this kind of thing, but it'll be in such a fluid fashion. Mm-hmm. You'll be in so comfortable with it. You rotate your cattle every 2 days. You make sure you got their minerals. You've done that. We're going to get into some of these other things. Their apple cider vinegar once a month. It's really simple, and you can enjoy life.
You know, I think people have, well, I know they are, they've been very fearful of going to get clover on their place because of the problem of bloat. This is a thing that is very prevalent in every conversation you get into, is bloat problem. What is your bloat problem? Our bloat problem is a very minimum, and it's for two reasons. Number one, the cattle grow up with the clover in their diet from the day one that it starts coming up. They're there to graze on it, and they're grazing over it. So they're accustomed to it. Now, as it gets more abundant and real flourishing and everything, they really get filled on it. What we have found in feeding their minerals, we have a mineral with the poloxylene in it, and this helps to prevent bloat, and it has been most effective for us.
Mr. Solik, this process of bringing in these new stocker cows, if they're starting off with, say, 20 head of just recently weaned cattle, one, they're going to have quite a job on their hand having to train all 20. Later on in this cycle, you're still going to have some that have been through the process of time that those little ones will learn after, but you still have an initial phase that you take them through to get them to acknowledge and understand the fence and how to be comfortable around you and as you move them through all of this. So would you kind of help our listeners understand what you do so they can, you know, better apply that to their situation?
I have found it to be more advantageous for us to, where we're buying the calves, they're coming off their mothers, and 2 hours later from then, they're over at our place away from their mothers. They can't hear their mothers, nor can their mothers hear them, because they're 40 miles apart. So I have found it to be to my advantage to take and put them in the pen, close the gate, put out some hay, just a good grade coastal hay, and plenty of water. Let the little babies beller and carry on, walk the fence line there for about 24 hours, and they'll begin to get so that you can hear them day and night, because they're going to be calling for their mothers. Then I give them something else to think about. I go in there and I'll stretch a wire, a slick piece of 12 and a half gauge wire. I'll just pull it across the pen, the other side of the water trough, so they can get to the water trough and it'll be near the gate that they came in. I'll pull that wire across the pen there and tie it off with an insulator on each end. Then I jump my hot wire over to it and make that wire hot. Now, as the little yearlings will come down there, they'll see this bright, glistening wire, and I may hang a piece of string or a hay string on it or something that kind of waves in the breeze to call their attention to it. And they'll go down to their curiosity to figure out what that is. They'll go up and smell of it, and they get shocked. They'll be going around other cattle, and they'll happen to get to the wire, and they get shocked. After they get shocked once or twice, and they find out where that current is coming from, and everybody has the same treatment, then they are broken to knowing what that shiny wire is. It is hot, and it will shock, and it hurts. So they become trained to stay away from that, and they'll start looking for it. Then whenever we keep them in there for 7 days, feeding them hay, water, and have the wire there.
The reason maybe some of these might be wondering why you're giving them hay if you're a grass farmer, well, inside of a pen, there's no forage there.
No forage. So they just need some good dry hay, good quality, clean, and they'll do just fine on that. And whenever they get out, then they're ready to hunt green grass. They already know what the shiny wire is, and they'll stay away from that. And not only that, while they're in that pen, I walk in and mill around among them to get them so that they'll quit running around and being afraid of us. I don't try to drive them. I just walk among them. I don't holler. I don't slap my legs or shake my britchy legs or anything else.
You don't have these shock guns.
No shock. They are becoming accustomed, and the ones that want to come up and smell of you, just stand still and let them be the ones to make the move. You just stand there and let them smell of your hand. Don't try to reach out and pet them or anything. Just let them smell. And after they begin to do that, one of them gets your shirt sleeve and begin to kind of chew on it. And they become gentle there. And then they're so much easier to handle than whenever you turn them out. They're not going to be afraid. Whenever they see the one wire out there glistening in the sunlight, they won't be afraid of it either. They say, okay, that's our boundary. But if they don't believe it and they go over and touch it, yeah, that is our boundary. So they find out very, very quickly how you're going to operate, and it will continue that way all the way through.
At this point, most of the work has been done. In this model, we started in this month at the recording of this broadcast here, May 2008. We've run through the whole cycle that I'm not going to repeat again. Just over a year later, we are now at this point in July to August of 2009. They have these cattle on board. Regardless of how much they're starting with, we've got a model of 20 head of cattle on 20 acres to start with. There will be a period of a week to get all those 20 will be trained in that week for the fence and being comfortable with you, or will it take a little longer with that many?
In a week, they will be trained, and not only that, they will be gentled down more, and just being on hay and water, green grass will look very inviting to them as soon as they're out. So their mind will not be on roaming and also concerned where their mother is, because they have already forgotten that. So they will be more interested in getting out to the green grass, grazing and walking the fence line, getting their boundaries down in their minds. And that pretty well would be taken care of. But as we are getting these things done, And normally the animals that we buy, many of them are not castrated at the time that we get them. That's not a big problem for us, and we really don't mind that whatsoever, because animals that have not been castrated, they have a little more muscle development and maybe have grown somewhat faster than the others. So we kind of feel like that it's an advantage to us. Whenever we get them, if we get them settled down well, and where we're running them with the heifers in there, we'll go ahead and castrate them, and we use the Calcrete Bander in the castration. I do the put them in the squeeze chute, and I do it by myself. It's not a big job for a person to do it, and I'm past the 80-year mark, and it's pretty easy to do that thing and just slip that band on there and tighten it up real well, let them out, and about 28 days later, the testicles drop off with the sac, and everything is done. They already healed up, and you don't have a problem with it. So that's easy to do, and then with some you might want to, some of you may want to dehorn those that have horns. That's not a big problem. Do it while you have them there at the pen and get that done. Use a good smear on that horn so that the flies will not blow it and you'll have screw worms and some of those things happen. So that's not a problem. You just go ahead and take care of those and it'll be out of your way.
So Mr. Solik, with those that already have a cow-calf operation, they're going to have some of this heavy-duty equipment, the squeeze chute and the tub and some of this other heavy-duty fencing, that if somebody's just starting with a corner plot of 20 acres and that's all they have or all they can afford at the time, there's a way to introduce these cattle, these new yearlings, into this 20-acre paddock's rotational system without having all that. So let's give our listeners a little bit of some tips there on how to go about it. And you just mentioned the castration process. If those who don't already have this kind of equipment and don't want to go into debt for it and maybe want to save up for it, they can get all this going without it. So it's in their best interest to do the castration where?
Most every place that you're going to be looking for your yearlings that you're going to put out here, they're going to have the facilities there. They're going to have a squeeze chute and a tub and alleyway that they can go ahead and do that for you at that time. And then you bring home an animal that is already cleaned up, ready to go on grazing. You just got to go through the weaning process. You're still going to have a little gathering pen. And in this little gathering pen, and what our suggestion is going to be that you get some field fence, which is, runs about 320 feet in a roll of it. And you can buy that for around $120 to $150 a roll, according to what gauge wire you're getting in the height of it. So you can fix a pen that's going to have about an 80 by 80, and you will get a alleyway in it. That way you can load your cattle out from that from this 20-acre plot. And so a lot of you, if you're going to put this 20 acres in, you may have these other facilities already on your place, and you're just developing this 20 to get underway with your clover and grazing program of rotation. If you don't have it at hand, then make arrangements of where you're getting your livestock from, that they'll be castrated, and if you want them dehorned, they'll be dehorned. A big part of them may already be muleys are dehorned at that time.
So this pen that we're talking about would be on the outside of this 20-acre segment here.
Yes.
And you would put it in the corner that's most appropriate for getting traffic in and out with the trucks and trailers for loading and unloading.
That's right.
And you would put it at that 20-acre plot, and with this galvanized wire, some of it ranges, for, as you said, $120, $150, close to 4 feet on its side. So we would kind of pick it up about 12 inches from the ground to give it a little bit more height, because these yearlings are going to need some something higher than just 4 feet initially to get introduced to this. So with that, you'd get your post, and you'd mount it to where the fence would be up off the ground approximately 12 inches, and you would run it around as an external box, a small box, approximately 82 feet on each side out of that one roll. And if you wanted a completely galvanized fence, you're looking at $230 plus $250 a roll. So mm-hmm. if you want just the top and the bottom galvanized, keep in mind they do rust and they will not last as long. And the fully galvanized ones are running $230 to $250 a roll. That will still give you plenty of square footage, over 6,000 square feet in this external and introduction pin. We actually need to add an additional water point with the rest of the water line and water points. Is that correct?
That's correct. We just have to extend our water line down 330 feet, and that way we'll have our pin there. And then we were discussing here, if you're selling this 20 head of cattle, it's not likely if you're selling for grass fat that you may have to pin them 15 times if you're selling one animal at a time, and they're grazing through these different paddocks here, and they'll probably be at the far end whenever you have a sale, and you'll need to have him processed. So you'll need just bring him down the gates, go into the pen, and load him out. And this would be true every time you have one, two, or three of them that are sold. You'll be pinning them all, sorting out the one that you're going to ship out, and just load him out. When you bring them in, they're going to have water available and this fencing around here that they'll stay in, and it will be strong enough to keep them. And after a day or two, they'll settle down real well, and they'll have water and hay and also be trained for the hot fence as well.
So this will still work for those that don't have the big metal fencing. They can still pull this off and then save some of the profit that they have and get that equipment installed.
So the cost is going to be the same.
So, Mr. Solik, there's some items that these cattle are going to need during the course of their stay on this 20-acre rotational paddock system. We've decided on about three things here. You already touched on the mineral that you're giving them, and that's only part of the year. You've got two that you're actually using during the course of the year.
On the time that you're feeding the animals here with the piloxylene, and it's going to run from the month of clover coming in, which is going to be around November, December. You'll start feeding then the minerals that has the piloxylene in it. And this is one of the things that kicks up the price on your minerals for those months. But you're going to be feeding it for about 6 months. And we have said that the animals are going to consume about 0.8 of an ounce per 100 pounds of body weight. So a 600 pound animal is going to be consuming about 4.8 ounces per day, or for easy figuring, 5 ounces per day. You can get down to the pennies on it, but it'll kind of vary on the difference in weight and everything else that's in there. And this is running, you have the figures on that.
Well, with that 20 head, what we came out with is a 50-pound bag will run out in 5 days.
Yeah.
At this rate of consumption with 20 head. So what you'll need to get through a month, because we're looking at about 6 months of this, maybe seven, you're looking at 6 bags per month. So 6 50-pound bags is going to run you $24 each bag, because that price you just found out just about doubled here since the last time you checked into it. 6 bags times $24 each, you're running $144 per month on this piloxylene. And again, the piloxylene is used. It's a ingredient that's combined with minerals and vitamins for the control of bloating, so that these cattle will digest this winter forage appropriately and efficiently. So over the span of 6-7 months, we've got a range of $864 up to $1,008. Basically just the middle of the road figure there, $1,000 for this 6 to 7 month use of. And it may only take 6 months, but you may need to increase their consumption depending on the animal's needs somewhere during the course of that month. So I put the figure in there just to go ahead and count on $1,000 right now for 6 months of this mineral. Mr. Solik, you have the other Redmond's mineral that you use.
And that's much cheaper. In fact, it'll run back to I believe around $10 or $11 per 100 there. So that's going to be for the other 6 months. And they really do not eat that so heavily at that time. Probably on the 20 head, they won't eat 100 pounds of that per month. So you figure just 100 pounds a month for the 20 head and say $12 a month there. So that's going to be another $72.
Another item that you use in your operation to keep the overhead low is apple cider vinegar. Now, that might seem like something rather unusual and strange by other people that aren't used to that. Would you explain why you're using such a common household item?
This is something that friends of mine, they were talking with people that were grazing, running sheep and goats and cattle. And instead of their use of the high Ivamec and those other high price animals that were having to be used for control of internal parasites, they were using apple cider vinegar. So I've got me the apple cider vinegar, and with the Kimbalizer, we take and we put it into their drinking water at the rate of 1 fluid ounce per 100 pounds of body weight is what they're consuming. So we set up a Kimbalizer, and it is gauged out that it injects into the water 1 fluid ounce per gallon of water. Well, the animals are consuming that at the rate of 1 gallon of water per 100 pounds of body weight. So they automatically limit themselves as to the amount of apple cider vinegar that they should receive. Well, we had the stools checked on those animals, and they have been clean. So with us, the apple cider vinegar has been a good way of controlling the internal parasites on the animals and keeping them clean.
And that's what's worked for you. And,
yes.
and a lot of other people have concurred with that in their experience.
Yes.
We're not saying this is necessarily going to work for you, but there's several people who have found it to be very effective against parasite control. And also you're building a system here in this paddock system to where it's not as prone to an abundance of parasites and a prolification of thereof. So you're already lessening the likelihood to begin with, and then you're further controlling it internally with this apple cider vinegar.
Their exposure to getting infected is much less by going through the rest and rotation. They're drinking water, since they're not drinking out of a tank or pond, that also cleans up considerably. And then with the aid of the apple cider vinegar, we're able to keep them clean, and the animals do quite well in their weight gain.
And with the consumption of apple cider vinegar diluted into the water that they're drinking, One time a month for the whole, in this model, 20 head of cattle. For those that are running more, they're obviously going to have to use the numbers you've given to come up with more. But apple cider vinegar is rather cheap. So we've come up with what we would use on the course of a year is approximately $30, mm-hmm. unless apple cider vinegar decides to double overnight.
Right.
Right now, you're under $40 easily on apple cider vinegar. It's a non-taxable food product, so it's something that has worked very well for many people in controlling parasites. So with that, we move into another item that you use, and it's this thing. You call it just a back rub. It's some carpet and metal and wire and some other things. Explain why you're using that. It looks like it's mobile, so you can, it looks like anyway. So explain to the people out there how you're trying to help on this flies that seem to drive these cattle so nuts.
This is nothing but the old common back rub, and I just happen to have the pipe that was welded up, and it used to have a feeder inside of it. And I just strung wire between the two points, put some old carpet on it, wrapped it with some tow sacks, and we're soaking it with diesel, and we put a little bit of cydectin on it and using it for fly control. And it seems to be working quite well. Then at the same time, our cattle are out here and our dung beetles are working well, and they're also helping us to control the flies because they're breaking that manure down, carrying it down into the soil. So the flies do not hatch out in the numbers that they would be if it was just out there in a pile and it stayed there for a week or 2 weeks before it's broken down. So we have several things that are working to our advantage here in controlling other flies. The back rub is also a good time passer for these old cattle because they get out here and they get full and they want to go around and rub up against something. And that back rub, they'll get in there and they'll butt it with their heads and roll it around on their neck and then down on their back. And we're noticing that our flies are pretty much under control. We have some, but I don't think that you can get 100% because they'll hatch out over the neighbors and come over to you. You can continue to keep those into pretty good control.
You mentioned that with this rugs back rub system that you're using diesel, and then there was another ingredient that
Cydectin
also. So there's also some people that we've talked to that are using a diatomaceous earth combination with some powdered sulfur, and they're mixing it, and I'll give the little ratio here of what they're doing, and they're finding that is as effective on their cattle as well. This just requires an application because the first rainfall, it's going to wash away, and of course, I guess in a certain amount of time, it will come off as well. So there's a lot of experimentation going out there. Some people are getting into orange oil applications on the hide that are mixed with some other ingredients, trying to keep it as natural and inexpensive as possible. So this is just information for you to consider, but you will need to do something about it because the less stress your cattle are in, the better they'll produce, the better their immune system is. And if they're not having to whip that neck around and slobber over everything in the process, it might be to their advantage. One of your friends, Mr. Solik, is Karen Hathaway, and she's found this to be beneficial for her herd over there. It's a combination of the non-food grade. There's evidently a difference in the texture or consistency of it. The non-food grade diatomaceous earth you can get for about $16. It's a 50-pound bag, and this goes quite a ways. And she combines that with a $4 bag of sulfur. That's just your garden sulfur. And just mixing that a one-to-one ratio. So if you have a pound of this to a pound of that, and just multiply it out for how much you're going to cover, and just you can use that sifter and turn it around on the cattle, and so you can just run that 16-pound bag and the 4-pound bag of sulfur out, and you're going to find out that it's a reasonable cost to keep these cattle as comfortable as possible out there in the paddock system. Mr. Solik, having covered quite a bit, we hope that people will really take it to heart, put it in action, because, well, one, we don't know how much longer you're going to be around. They might not be able to call you here in the next 20 years, but they'll have this available for them that they can listen to again and again, watch again and again, and give you a little bit of freedom on your phones, since it almost seems like it's been surgically attached to your ears, as I've seen you on that phone quite a bit.
Aaron, I appreciate very much you volunteering your time, your service, your knowledge, your techniques, and all these things, because it takes a young person to understand all the things that it requires today to put something of this magnitude together, that it will be able to go on air and something that can hang on for a long period of time and be useful information. You have done a great job in assembling all of it. The number of people that you have contacted and have involved in this, it's been well coordinated throughout and has covered a multitude of different facets of the program. I appreciate you doing this. And no, I won't be around to answer a lot of those questions 20 years from now, but I might still be answering some 10 years from now.
And we hope so.
So we'll do the best that we can, as long as we can, and as well as we can. And that's about all you can make of it.
Well, Mr. Solik, as we've gone through this and we've put a price tag on most of this stuff, we're looking at well under $30,000 that somebody can do out of pocket or however they come about the money and actually start something either by itself or within their cow-calf operation that they currently have and actually get an excellent return.
You know, this is something that we haven't been able to talk about in many years, and that was to be profitable in the cow-calf operation or in the stocker cattle operation. but we actually have been profitable for the last several years. We've learned a lot. And now we have the alley which we're able to go down, and doing these things correctly, we're able to be profitable at the end. And that's a great feeling.
Gene Solik, it has been a wonderful adventure to learn about you as a person and your operation with intensive paddock rotational grazing. That is a win-win situation. It's a win for the people who are in the business this way. It's a win for the animals in their process before they become food on our tables. It's a win for the soil and the farms that will implement this. Your leadership, your enthusiasm about this subject, this system is contagious. It is encouraging. And all those who already know you, who are listening to this recording, I'm sure will gladly concur with that. Those that will benefit from your information, though not knowing you personally, as a result of this broadcast, the video that will accompany it, will all be indebted to you for what you have willingly offered to those who will listen. And from the bottom of my heart, I say thank you. And the grace that you exhibit and the generosity that you share is rare. And in just 34 years, I've met quite a number of people. Those aren't just words to butter you up with. I mean it in all sincerity. And I thank you so much for the willingness that you've to allow me to come and just pick your brain and put you on tape and cord you and run you all around ragged. As we both said, the last week felt like two in one, if not more. So we want all of the listeners to know that they will be able to read the description for this and follow the websites for Star Haven Farms. Mr. Gene Solik does not have a website. At best, he has an email. Those that already know that, we'll leave it to them to dialogue with him. But this will be a lot of information that there's no sense in him having to repeat. Tommy Carroll, as we mentioned earlier, who can do a wonderful job of giving you a system that you can put in place. If you're not comfortable with writing up the blueprint yourself, you can contact Mr. Carroll at area code 713-899-3606, and he'll gladly tell you what he can do for you, and y'all can take it from there.
Aaron, I appreciate the opportunity to work with you. I had no idea that it would entail this much work to get all these things down so it could be kept and passed on to others. It's been a real privilege to work with you. You're most energetic, and also for the foresight that you have here of taking the time to do this thing. I had never even thought about doing anything like this because I did not have the talent, didn't have the thoughts for doing it, or anything else. And I'm pleased to have the opportunity to express and to put this out so others may use it. This is something that others should get involved in and help to promote America getting back to the point that we are self-sufficient and that we can take care of ourselves and still be profitable, that we can conserve our resources and still be profitable, and that we can pass on to the next generation so that they may be profitable as well as knowledgeable. It's been my privilege, and I appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Solik, I can speak on behalf of all those that are listening. We thank you. And your wife, as y'all are generous people, to allow people to come into your property time and time again. And in many cases, spend many hours with you, whether in person or on the phone. And y'all's generosity and the grace that is reflected in your gray hairs is a wonderful thing. The Holy Bible speaks very favorably of those that have made it to this milestone and that you have arrived at in your life. And we younger generation do well to listen and learn which you have to offer. It will be most necessary as the days go on and will be to your benefit, those that do apply this method. And support those who are already doing it. So whether you're just a consumer and want some of the best beef that you can get, or you are interested in a very lucrative, comfortable means of living, farming and ranching, or you already have this system and are looking at ways of improving it, this is for you. The Gene Solik paddock system will do you wonders if you get in and make it happen.
This concludes this episode of the GOYI International Broadcast. Thank you for listening, downloading, and or reading along. You may contact us through the contact information available on the GOYI International's podcast page via the email, the websites of goyiinternational.mysite.com, and there you'll get further information by which you can write and or use other email and call.
Remember to visit often and stay late. There's a different world for you to discover.